Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the fifth canto, chapter 8, entitled The Character of Bharat Maharaj, text number 1. So, there is a whole series of verses and they're all in prose, so we will not chant them jointly, because that will be too difficult. Sisukuvacha. So we won't do it together because after Sisukuvacha it really won't work. Ikada tu mahanajam kritabishi kanai mai kavasyaku brahmaksanam abhigrinanu muhurta trayam Udakanta Upavivisa. Translation. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, My dear king, one day, after finishing his morning duties, evacuating, urinating, and bathing, Maharaj Bharat sat down on the bank of the river Gandaki for a few minutes and began chanting his mantra, beginning with Omkara. Tatra tadara janharini pipasaya jalasaya byasam ekaivupa jagama. O king, while Bharat Maharaj was sitting on the bank of that river, a doe, being very thirsty, came there to drink. Daya pepe yamana udaki tavativa vidurena nadatu mrigapatir. Unaduluka bayankara udapatat. While the doe was drinking with great satisfaction, a lion, which was very close, roared very loudly. This was frightful to every living entity, and it was heard by the doe. Text 4. Tam upasrutya sramrigavadu prakriti viklava chakita niriksana sutaram api hari. Baya binivesa vyagra ridaya pariplava dristi ragata trisna bayat sahasaivo chakrama. By nature, the doe was always afraid of being killed by others, and it was always looking about suspiciously. When it heard the lion's tumultuous roar, it became very agitated. Looking here and there with disturbed eyes, the doe, although it had not fully satisfied itself by drinking water, suddenly leaped across the river. Tasya utpatancha antarvancha urubaya vagalito yuni nirgato nagarbha suta sinipapata. The doe was pregnant. And when it jumped out of fear, the baby deer fell from its womb into the flowing waters of the river. Purport. There is every chance of a woman's having a miscarriage if she experiences some ecstatic emotion or is frightened. Pregnant women should therefore be spared all these external influences. Text number 6. Tat prasavutsarpanabhaya. Kedatura swaganena viyujamana kaschan chiddaryam krishna sarasati nipapa taha chamamara. Being separated from its flock and distressed by its miscarriage, the black doe, having crossed the river, was very much distressed. Indeed, it fell down in a cave and died immediately. Sisirada Gopinath ki jai. Text number 7. Tam tvina kunakam kripanam srutasanu yamanam abhiviksha pavidam bandur ivanu kampiyara jasir bharata adhyamrita mataram ityasramapadammanayat. Translation. The great king Bharat, while sitting on the bank of the river, saw the small deer bereft of its mother floating down the river. Seeing this, he felt great compassion. Like a sincere friend, he lifted the infant deer from the waves and, knowing it to be motherless, brought it to his ashram. Purport. The laws of nature work in subtle ways, unknown to us. Maharaj Bharat was a great king, very advanced in devotional service. He had almost reached the point of loving service to the Supreme Lord. But even from that platform, he could fall down onto the material platform. In Bhagavad Gita, we are therefore warned, Yamhina vyatayintyete purusham purusarsaba samdukkasukam diram so mrittatvayakalpate. O best among men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress, is steady in both, is certainly eligible for liberation. Bhagavad Gita 2.15. Spiritual salvation and liberation from material bondage must be worked out with great caution. Otherwise, a little discrepancy will cause one to fall down into material existence. By studying the activities of Maharaj Bharat, we can learn the art of becoming completely freed from all material attachments. As it will be revealed in later verses, Bharat Maharaj had to accept the body of a deer due to being overly compassionate for his infant deer. We should be compassionate by raising one from the material platform to the spiritual platform. Otherwise, at any moment, our spiritual advancement may be spoiled and we may fall down onto the material platform. Maharaj Bharat's compassion for the deer was the beginning of his fall down into the material world. So Maharaj Bharat somehow or other became caught in these circumstances which were brought about by the three modes of material nature. And in the cause of the current of events, this whole episode came about wherein the little deer somehow or other fell into the river practically right in front of him. So what was he meant to do? Should he have simply let the deer drown and say, this is destiny, this is the karma of this living entity? It is said that this living being is so much caught up in suffering here in the material realm, but now it is caught up in the body of a deer, which means in the mode of ignorance. It is not able to understand transcendental knowledge. What can I do? Should he just have mercifully called out, Hare Krishna, and let the little deer float along on the waves? He pulled out the deer of the water, which is a natural thing to do, an act of compassion, right? Who is so stone-hearted to let a tiny little helpless creature, like a little deer, basically an innocent animal, right, not harming anyone, right, but rather an innocent animal. So should he pulled out the innocent animal of the water, naturally so. Subsequently, what to do? Now, it had to be fed. It had no mother. Right? So what to do? From one thing came another. Once he had taken the deer out of the water, he was obliged to arrange for the sustenance and the maintenance of that deer, and it became somewhat of a task. And in due course of time, he became very much absorbed in taking care of this deer. So again, I'll ask the question to all of you. Should he have just really let that deer float in the water and just chant the holy name? Should he have somehow or other prayed for the deer, but not become involved with the deer? This is the dilemma. And what would we do in that case? And therefore, I'd like to hear from all of you what you would think you're going to do with the deer. Any volunteers? We have to resolve this issue. I mean, otherwise, how are we going to continue with this chapter? We'll never get the right conclusion. Maharaj Bharat made a mistake, it said. All right. But what was the mistake? So let us begin with the beginning. Where did it start, the mistake? In pulling the deer out of the water or not? That is my question. There is a second mic. Okay.
Hare Krishna, just to make the start, the Gandaki River, I guess, is one of the very holy rivers. So maybe the deer would have got liberation by leaving his body in that river.
Ah, yes.
One version. Or maybe later on he should have not got that much attached to the deer. Maybe that mistake also was on the later part.
Okay. Okay, yes. Yeah, that's a good answer. Yes, I tend to agree with this point that leaving aside that it was the Gandaki and that it was a holy river, leaving that aside for a moment, because we are looking at Maharaj Bharat as an example. And I can paint another scenario. Right? What if you are going for a japa walk along the beach, right? And there is a little child lying there. Yeah? It's early morning, no one is in sight, and there's this little baby lying there on the beach. It's not a deer, it's a human being. Yeah? What are you going to do? Are you saying jai, a new brahmachari for the ashram? Or are you saying this is just some soul who is destined to drown? So if we are amplifying the situation a little bit to something that could happen to us, right, then the question becomes more relevant. Right? And I think we should take this chapter as something that applies to us, as something that could happen. So whether it's a deer or a child, but an external situation where a living entity who is helpless, dependent on to be saved from a materially dangerous situation, should we act or not? Certainly, it was not a mistake for Bharat Maharaj to save the deer. Right? Even to afterwards continue to save it by supplying some foodstuff and taking some time was not a mistake, although that began to diminish his spiritual activities. Right? And therefore that had to be minimized as much as possible. But even some entanglement in caring for other living entities in itself is not an impediment for spiritual progress. We know that even householders who are terribly entangled compared to Bharat Maharaj, that they also can attain perfection in spiritual life, although there is a risk. There certainly is a risk to become distracted in the same way as Bharat Maharaj became distracted. So the essential fault or the essential mistake was that Bharat Maharaj began to neglect his spiritual practices. That was the fundamental mistake for which he ultimately had to become entangled in the material energy. And then because the cause of his neglect was the deer, and he went beyond taking care of the deer, he became deeply emotionally involved with the deer. And that led to him deriving so much pleasure from the relationship with the deer that pleasure began to take over from otherwise his pleasure of worshipping the Supreme Lord. The most amazing feature of this chapter is maybe that Bharat Maharaj was described to be in bhava, right? Or in a state of most exalted devotional service. In a state of deep emotional involvement in his devotional service. In a state where he had great taste from moment to moment in his spiritual practices, and great eagerness to always see the Lord. So one can see how even from such an advanced stage of devotional service, a living entity can again become bewildered. This is the constitutional nature of the living being, for being tatastha shakti, or marginal energy, that potentially the living entity can always fall prone to the material energy. Prabhupada says, due to the littleness of its existence, or Prabhupada also says, Lord Krishna is achyuta, he's infallible. Achyuta, being infallible, will never fall down. But the living entity, potentially, because he is merely a spark, Krishna is like the fire, and the living being is like a spark. So a spark, due to its insignificance, when it is in contact with the fire, will also burn like fire. When it is not in contact with the fire, will no longer burn like fire and become extinguished. So potentially, the living being can extinguish its natural Krishna consciousness and leave its natural condition to an artificial state of consciousness. Just as water has various forms in which it can exist. For example, in its ordinary liquid form, or in the form of ice. Right? And when it exists in the form of ice, it can again return to its natural state of water, its fluid state of water. But its ice, it's not at all acting like water. It has a whole different nature and a different effect. So in the same way, in the conditioned state, the living being has totally different features than in its original state. And in its conditioned state, the living entity is fundamentally in a state of never being fulfilled, of always being searching and seeking for happiness. Whereas in the spiritual world, there is constant ecstasy and fulfillment, and of course also seeking for further ecstasy, eternally increasing and eternally continuing. So, we must first of all guard ourselves from the onset. And Bharat Maharaj could have let the deer go, right, and drown in the Gandaki River, and would not have been at fault either. Right? He would have also been acting from a wise spiritual platform. Yes. If it would have been an ordinary river, would have been less auspicious, But maybe if he would have prayed for the predicament of that deer, maybe that would have also been sufficient. How much can we become involved in material relief work? That is a big question. And we must be careful. We must be very careful in becoming involved in these things. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur stresses the point that basically we have no time for flood relief, for earthquake relief, or this relief, or that relief, drought relief. That simply we are too much preoccupied with Harinam Sankirtan, which is the ultimate relief. Still, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out that if a person is suffering from starvation or from acute poverty, then a Vaishnava may also give in charity. And that is not to be given up, even by saintly persons, Bhagavad Gita is stating. However, that charity cannot be only for the material body. It must subsequently also be for the spiritual advancement. Bharat Maharaj could certainly have given prasad to the deer. Right? We can certainly distribute prasadam. In my previous visit, as I was on the way to Africa, and I also came through Chaupati, I remember that on that occasion the topic came on prasadam distribution and on food for life, and whether food for life was in itself adequate facility. And we pointed out that without the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, food for life was not adequate. Because ultimately, in this age, the process is Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam. That all devotional service must be followed and preceded by the chanting of the holy name, Jiva Goswami points out in his Bhakti Sandarbha, because that is the Yuga Dharma. And that is the only means of attaining the spiritual world. Therefore, we must, in this age, always preach Harinam Sankirtan. But then in the course of Harinam Sankirtan, we can ecstatically pull little deers out of the river, or just see. And if a deer would be in difficulty in front of us, generally speaking, a Vaishnava would make arrangements for that deer to save its life. Right? But could not get too much entangled in maintaining the deer. Right? A little, maybe. But not that much. So, Jad Bharat's position remains complex. It remains complex. He fell down. And he became especially entangled in the material energy. So, therefore, entanglement within the material energy must be avoided as much as possible, as much as reasonable. Therefore, Vaishnavas may choose an ashram. They may choose any of the four ashrams, and particularly a brahmachari is in a position of choice. A sannyasi, once the choice is made, has no choice. There is no question of any change. Even a vanaprastha cannot go back. A vanaprastha has the choice to stay a vanaprastha or to become a sannyasi. But there is no choice in going back to the grihastha ashram. A grihastha has a choice also for vanaprastha and sannyas, but cannot go back to the Brahmacharya ashram. It's not possible. So Brahmacharya, all choices are open. Huh? Can become a Grihastha, can after that also become Vanaprastha. But that choice is certainly not a matter of taste. Not that, what is my inclination? Is my inclination to be in the Grihastha ashram? That a Brahmachari should do some little soul searching and find out if within him there is maybe, what is my nature, what is my tendency? And that he should apply some psychology to judge whether he should be a Brahmachari or a Grihastha? No. The first premise is that better stay a Brahmachari, right? Better stay free from entanglement. That is the preferred choice. Because after all, the goal of life is to return back to Godhead. So, a Brahmachari is organizing his life to 100% engage in activities to go back to Godhead. That is his duty. A Brahmachari has no other business than to engage in activities which are directly dealing with going back to Godhead. A Grihastha may have to sometimes make so many material arrangements which are not directly part of devotional service. Just like Srila Rupa Goswami explains in the Nectar of Devotion in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the principle of Dasya. And he says, Dasya refers to all those activities which are engaged in devotional service for the pleasure of Krishna, including service to the deity, including chanting in the holy name, including meditation on the Lord, and all different services for the deity and for the Vaishnavas. All these activities constitute devotional service in Dasya. He said, but not the activities such as bathing and the fundamental basic taking care of the body. These are not directly constituting the purificatory activities. They are secondary duties that are also to be performed, but they themselves are not the transcendental activities. However, when the person is transcendentally situated, then such activities also become transcendental. Yes. So, a Grihastha has to do many more of such activities. Grihastha has to maintain a house, has to do so many activities to maintain the house. So all these things are part of the realm of material entanglement. Now when that Grihastha dedicates his life to the service of Krishna, then even maintaining that big house for the service of Krishna, and resting in that house for the service of Krishna and so on is also transcendental and can also be purifying. Right? Even then, such a house is not detrimental to devotional service. But the risk is there. The risk is there that one is not using it merely for the service of the Lord, but also for sense enjoyment. Because such a house offers a large variety for sense enjoyment. And therefore, one can easily utilize that facility to take a little break from direct devotional service and engage in some sense enjoyment in the name of I'm just keeping body and soul together. When it comes to material existence, that is actually the duty of a Vaishnava, to maintain body and soul together. And that is as far as material duties ought to reach. Right. Sometimes this is being observed as being fanatic, right? When we are minimizing material existence to merely keeping the body and soul together. But that is actually not a fact. From the pure spiritual point of view, this is not at all the case. To do anything more for the body or for our temporary existence than to keep body and soul together is actually risking to return, risking bondage in the material world. Therefore, it is not recommended. A Vaishnava, therefore, would prefer a renounced position, as Bharat Maharaj chose, right? But renunciation in itself, then again, is not at all glorified in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Rupa Goswami is pointing out that that renunciation is only slightly helpful in the beginning in devotional service. Right? Only slightly helpful in the beginning in devotional service. So you wonder, is it even worth it? And that rather, devotional service is in itself the means to become freed from material entanglement. And that by becoming totally absorbed in devotional service, whether one is in a renounced position or whether one is in a another position, it is actually not very essential at all. Rather, one should fill all his time with devotional service. And that is the essence. So from that perspective, looking again at the question whether Bharat Maharaj should have pulled the deer out or not, right? We can see that it doesn't really matter. Because even in a position of entanglement, in looking after the deer, if devotional service would have been his main preoccupation, right, then even those material duties of caring for a deer, right, of protecting a deer, if he would have done it to a proper level, that meant not overly protecting the deer, but doing the minimum necessary of keeping that deer alive, since it somehow or other, by fate, came on his path, right? He said, well, the Supreme Lord has sent me this deer. What to do? All right, I'll keep it alive, and I'll give it as much prasadam as I can, and, you know, throw some maha water at it at times, right? But for the rest, I have my own engagement. So he could have certainly taken it like that without any difficulty and not at all have become entangled by it. Because Yukta Vairagya versus Falgu Vairagya is to be looked at in this regards. And Yukta Vairagya, meaning Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha, Yukta Vairagya Ujjate, that simply if we engage everything in the service of Krishna, then there is no danger at all of becoming entangled in the material world. So, Falgu Vairagya, or the renunciation compared to the Falguna River, the river which flows underground, right? Which means that underground, still, our material desires remain. Right? Although externally so renounced, because renunciation is the focus. In Falgu Vairagya, renunciation is the focus. But in Yukta Vairagya, service to Krishna is the focus. So that is the first point. Service to Krishna is our focus. And then Additionally, we keep ourselves in simple conditions just so that we will not unnecessarily become distracted from devotional service. And therefore, it is not our business to keep pets or all these things or to unnecessarily get dependence. Rather, let us simply serve Krishna. Even ladies, if they don't have a child and if they therefore are inclined to have a pet, or if they have so much motherly love, right, that still it is not satisfied with 12 children, and if on top of that they still want pets as well to express their motherly affection even further, it is better if they transfer that to worshipping the deity. Right? Better if that motherly affection is transferred to Krishna, and if simply we take care of the deity of Krishna. That is better than keeping any pets. Krishna might have kept pets, but that's Krishna. Krishna could do so. He is the Supreme Lord, and Krishna can never, ever become entangled by the material energy. Krishna cannot be attracted by the material energy. Krishna can only be attracted by the internal energy. But the living being, due to being tatastha, can actually become attracted by the material energy. And therefore, never ever for a moment must we think that we are above the material energy. So this particular chapter deals with the theme of fall down in spiritual life. And there are various factors that can lead to fall down. And in the case of Bharat Maharaj, we see that neglect is the cause of fall down. So we should understand, potentially fall down is a reality for a living entity, right? Even up to the platform of Bhav, it is stated. So that is to be remembered, and we should therefore always safeguard. We see that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Srila Rupa Goswami to carefully fence the bhakti creeper. He said we must water this bhakti creeper with hearing and chanting and fence it very carefully. Look after it very carefully. So in the scriptures we see examples of fall down, and we see Bharat Maharaj as an example, and we see that neglect of spiritual activity and attachment, material attachment, emotional involvement in a material relationship became the cause of his fall down. We're seeing that in the example of Sobari Muni, that an offense to a devotee became the cause of his fall down. We see more examples. We see Gopal Chakravarti, who criticized Haridas Thakur in quite a rigid way. He entered into him with in a scriptural debate about the chanting of the holy name, and said that as far as he was concerned, the statements of the scripture were exaggerated, made very strong statements about Haridas, and fell down. So we see different warnings about fall down. Another point is made in the Upadesamrita. The Upadesamrita gives us various factors which can spoil devotional service. Achyahara prayasya prajalpaniyama graha jana sangam saluryam cha sadbir bhakti vinasyati. These factors can destroy our spiritual life. Achyahara, over-endeavoring for material acquisitions. Right. This may also occur in spiritual life. It is there described in the Madhurya Kadambini. There is the principle of Tarangaranjini, or enjoying the side benefits from devotional service. As we are engaging in devotional service, after some time, automatically, we are getting recognition and we're getting facility. Just like here in Chaupati, some are in white and some are in the famous Chaupati saffron, right? That special color which has now become well known for a high spiritual standard, that one can walk in and it can be awarded. It is even awarded in a ceremony. One cannot just get it like that. So imagine after all that, right? You now are wearing Chaupati saffron. You now have been awarded this recognition for your standards in spiritual life. And now you have not only worn it newly, but you have worn it for quite some time. You have now been appointed a monitor over junior devotees. Right? You are now a counselor. Yes. Now devotees offer obeisances to you. Are you offering in return or standing and receiving with folded hands? You may receive a cushion, right? Seated, extra thick, right? And soft. When you are in the assembly of Vaishnavas, the ghee lamp comes to you first. Some days, right? Some days, some inexperienced ghee lamp carrier walks right past you with that ghee lamp. Oh, horror. Doesn't he know Vaishnav etiquette? Right? How can he overlook, right, our status? Right? And it can continue and continue until you get a danda, and until you get disciples, until you are a GBC, BBT trustee, and so many other designations. And all these designations are there to burden us, to trap us and catch us, to distract us, and are all facilities for enjoyment. There is no doubt about it. One can enjoy all these things. One can enjoy Chaupati saffron. One can. One can enjoy seniority. Oh yes. One can enjoy being served. Right? But not very long. Right? Because all this kind of enjoyment is in the realm of material enjoyment. And material enjoyment, right, is compared to a drop in the desert. It doesn't satisfy very much. So there is a need for more and more and more and more. And there is no end to it. So in this way one can, even at an advanced stage in devotional service, when one actually had genuine taste for Krishna consciousness, one can gradually trade it in. One can gradually trade it in. Yeah? For this Tarangaranjini. It is quite amazing. So in this way, there are so many factors mentioned that can spoil our spiritual life. The list in the Upadesamrita continues prayasas, over-endeavor. Another very dangerous, a very dangerous trap. Which can happen to the most enthusiastic devotee. The devotee that is actually genuinely enthusiastic and his good quality of enthusiasm can become the cause of his downfall. Because his enthusiasm can drag him along into taking on more than he can handle. And he preaches and preaches and preaches and preaches and preaches so much that he no longer has any energy left for his sadhana. And he's so busy, and then his depth in his spiritual practices becomes neglected, and day by day his rounds become more shallow and his reading become more shallow, and it becomes mechanical because he has no energy left for such practices at all. So spiritual life is a matter of a razor's edge. One must be very careful to be balanced and to take care of all these things. And we have seen how so many devotees fell down in ISKCON. So many leaders fell down in ISKCON. Sannyasis fell down. Of course, when a sannyasi falls down, he falls down with a very loud, when he falls, there's a big noise, a lot of noise. When a brahmachari falls down, there is also noise. And for the grihastha, there can be the silent fall down. Right? The silent fall down by not following the regulative principles in his own ashram. When the doors are closed and the curtains are closed, and who will know? How will anybody know other than by the morose face of that devotee? Right? So, fall down happens on all kinds of levels of spiritual advancement in all kinds of ashrams. And it's a big question. Whenever it happens, how could it happen? Yeah. And questions arise like, well, but if it could happen to him, then what about me? If the great, powerful horses became swept away by the waves of the river, then what is the hope for the little skinny ones like us? Yeah. The lightweight horses. Yeah. If the big, powerful horses did not make it, then what can a lightweight horse hope for? Even the great fell down. Then what about us? What is our hope? Should we give up? Such thoughts come, and people do give up, actually. We see when a great devotee falls down, many people whose faith was depending on him immediately give up. Oh, well, if he couldn't make it, then, you know, forget it. You know, it's no hope for me. Yeah. So all these kind of sentiments come up. So that's one thing. Another thing is when a devotee falls down, and especially a mature devotee falls down, we have to look at the mistake. What did he do wrong? What was the mistake? And therefore, it's important that we are aware of all these causes. And we're naming some today. We're naming neglect, as the example of Bharat Maharaj, offenses. We've named atyahara, collecting more than required, and beginning to enjoy the material facilities. Also the ones that come on their own accord in the cause of devotional service. Over-endeavor at the neglect of either our spiritual practices or either our preaching. If we neglect our preaching and we are all day into sadhana, then after some time that sadhana will become dry. And we're chanting 64 rounds and every ekadasi we do total nirjal, no matter hot season or not. And sure enough, the five last days of Kartik, we do the whole Panchagavya thing, right? With cow dung and cow urine as well, right? Every included, right? We don't cut our nails, we grow our beard and we let our hair grow. And everything we do, and that's not all. We sleep on the floor, we eat on the floor with hands on our back, right? And only go down once. And if you lift your head, finished eating for that day. Made all this tapasya, chaturmasya, right? And so on. But all that also, becomes dry. It becomes dry. And even if we hear from morning till night, we hear Krishna Katha. You think, now I will make sure that I'm always thinking of Krishna. I will have a tape recorder and I'll have it on my head all day long and I'll just hear Prabhupada. Right? But even then, right? Even then, one can become dry in his heart. Why? Why? Isn't this one of the essential things to hear about Krishna? And isn't that supposed to fill the heart? Matchita matgata paranas buddhiyantas parasparam katayantas chamam nicham tushanti cha ramanti cha. Isn't supposed hearing of Krishna, isn't it supposed to give us taste and bliss then? How can it be that even if you hear all day, that still your heart can become dry? Yeah. Because ultimately, unless we become the servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and develop the mood of compassion for the conditioned souls, it won't work. It's not enough. If we don't preach, no juice. All the sadhana becomes dry without preaching because it remains self-centered. How does it the first line? Monan charanti vijane na parata nista. Prahlad Maharaj is speaking. First line just doesn't want to come. Anyway, he's explaining how even if one follows great vows of austerity such as Mona, Charanti, or one goes into the forest, ultimately, just one's own bhajan alone, Paratanista, the firm determination will not come until one becomes concerned with the well-being of all other living beings. And especially in this age, that is the Yuga Dharma, Harinam Sankirtan. So we must do that. We must preach. We must preach. Otherwise, still not good enough. So how difficult it is, how careful we must be in our spiritual life, how intelligent we must be. It is said, sato vritti, one must follow in the footsteps of the advanced Vaishnavas, but not blindly, but rather in knowledge and keeping a good balance in his spiritual life of his own spiritual practices, of preaching, of distributing the mercy, of not over-endeavoring, of not over-collecting, not eating more than required, even if it is prasadam, and so on. So all these things, if we must protect our devotional kripa. So in this chapter, we will meditate on how to protect our bhakti kripa and how to develop our spiritual life steadily and carefully, and yet how to be very active as a preacher, sometimes taking risks to give out the mercy, but not too much. So in this way, we must proceed carefully in our spiritual life. I guess I must bring it to a conclusion because time is moving along. The safest path is to always take shelter of the spiritual master and senior Vaishnavas and to consult. Whenever there's doubt, to inquire. But not inquiring for the sake of inquiring. Not just asking questions, but to digest the answers deeply. Just asking questions also is not good enough. One can even fall in the trap of asking questions. Always asking questions, but never deeply thinking about the answers and implementing them in his life. And again, asking a question. So even just being inquisitive alone is not enough. So everything must be used for increasing the quality of our spiritual life. So let that be the conclusion. And then let us open up the discussion forum for questions or comments for a few minutes before we end. Yes.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. One point you mentioned about how prayashascha, over-endeavoring and going too much involved in services and neglecting our own sadhana in the name of enthusiasm can make our Krishna consciousness dry. Now, for brahmacharis, also there is this point of surrender. A brahmachari might have some taste. He might know that he might be nourished by some particular aspect of service, or some services. But because he has this own conception that I have to just do what the authorities say, and theoretically knowing that this surrender or this service attitude will help him, he pushes himself. But within, he is holding grudges. He might hold grudges, he might be struggling with his own mind. So how does a devotee deal with that situation when he wants to surrender but he has his own struggles?
Yes, we want to surrender. And yet, internally, there is resistance. And we may not want that, but it is still there. So somewhere along the line, we must certainly stretch our surrender. Just like physical exercises. If you never do any exercise, then if from one day to the next you have to touch your toes, you cannot do it anymore. You have become stiff. Then you cannot in one day touch the toes. You have to practice it by stretching, gradually stretching the muscles, by exercising a little and a little. So it is in the same way in surrender. It is not a matter of sentiment. I want to surrender. Yes, very nice. And even the authorities may sometimes not be able to judge us 100%. And they may ask us to surrender to something which really is very, very difficult for us. Very difficult. And we may want to do it, but then we are feeling that we become so disturbed. Right? So if we find that we are surrendering to an authority, and in the course of it, we are sincerely trying, but we become so disturbed, then it is time to go back to that authority and explain our predicament, our problem. I'm really trying to do as you say, but I'm getting more and more disturbed. So any authority must know at that time that now I must be careful. And maybe I have to adjust my instruction. This is one very important point that is sometimes overlooked, that yes, we must surrender to the instruction of authorities, but maybe these instructions need to be adjusted many times. There may need to be some fine tuning on the way. So during the process, we may have to adjust it. Just like shoes, you put on a few varieties of shoes until they fit. Because You may go to the shop and it may say 8 is your size, but it's like sometimes they cut them a little narrow, sometimes they cut them a little wide, and it depends on your foot, you know, if, which one is exactly the right one. So some fine tuning is required also. So therefore, ultimately, between authorities and between seniors and juniors, there should be sudrida suridam, firm friendship. And especially, that is the duty of the senior. The senior has to be so kind, so gentle, so accommodating, so understanding, and yet not compromising the standards, but still be ready to see this person cannot fully make it yet. Doesn't matter. We'll temporarily make some adjustment. We'll progress a little slower. We'll put a few steps in between if need be. But the... Yeah, I come on a point that I made in a lecture in Mayapur recently, you know, that the senior must conquer the heart. He must conquer the heart of his dependents. It's the only way it will ever work. Otherwise, it will never work. Right? Otherwise, the dependent will not open his heart. He'll think of being laughed at. There's no welcoming atmosphere to reveal your weakness. Yeah? If I'm surrounded by devotees who are all acting as if they are super devotees, as if they've never any doubts, I will also not speak of any of my doubts. This is not a favorable atmosphere. So we have to be very honest, very kind, honest. Seniors have to be considerate, go out of their way for their dependents. Therefore, to become a counselor is a huge responsibility. To become responsible for other spiritual life requires that we really give ourselves. Not a casual thing, big thing. So to be an authority is a big responsibility, which many times our authorities in ISKCON have not been able to fill in properly, and as a result, a lot of injustice was done to devotees. So if we get a position of authority, we really have to become a shelter. We should realize, I have to be the shelter of these devotees. Then all those problems will be taken care of. Anyone else? No more. More?
The Prabhu here is wanting to ask a question. How is Name Ruchi, Vaishnav Seva and Jive Doya the essence of all the scriptures?
Well, we hear this statement in a story, right, in a discussion between Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, and there is one narration where it is stated that when Rupa Goswami was asked to summarize the essence of the philosophy, that he mentioned these three things. Not surprising, because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after all, has pointed out Nirantar Nama Sankirtan, Nirantar Krishna Nama Sankirtan as the essence, directly, from his own mouth. And he has said that serving the Vaishnavas is there. And Nam Sankirtan involves two things, right? We discussed it. It involves our own purification and it involves delivering the conditioned souls. So, One can never serve Krishna directly. That is not possible. Therefore, we must be the servant of the Vaishnavas. And in this age, one cannot serve Krishna without Harinam Sankirtan, which means chanting the holy name and distributing the holy name. So then these principles are all automatically included. So generally, we don't hear these three stress so much. It is not that Srila Prabhupada mentioned these three regularly, and that he just regularly said, and I want to stress once again, you know, which are the three essential principles of, you know, our teachings. So, although we know the story, and although we know that these three are mentioned, Vaishnava, Seva, Jiva, Daya, and Namruti, that we should, we don't have to make it our a regular preaching slogan. No? I think we'll just repeat the standard ones. Harinama, Harinama, Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, Nasteva, Gatira Nyata. Right? And obviously the point Shushusho Saradanasya Vasudeva Katha Ruchi, that one by hearing from Bhagavatam one can develop taste for Vasudeva Katha, or Srinvata Swakata Krishnam Punya Sravana Kirtanam, by hearing the heart becomes purified. These are the slokas that Prabhupada quoted regularly again and again. Srinvatam Swakata Krishnam and Harinama Harinama Eva Kevalam. So I think those are the ones we regularly emphasize. Right? Because just as he did, we will also do and point at Srimad Bhagavatam. Because if we make these three our main slogan, then we're pointing at that particular narration and story, and some tell it in a different way and some don't agree that it was actually said and so on. Right? But whatever may be, we accept that these are indeed the essence of spiritual life. Srinvatam Swakata Krishnam Punya Sravana Kirtanam Harinama 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 Eva Kevalam. Because the more authorized our statements are, and the more our statements are representing the acharyas, the more they cannot be attacked, the more safe they are, the more anyone's doubt will just be destroyed by them. And therefore, we should simply repeat things as Srila Prabhupada has established them. Then we are very strong. Our sampradaya will be strong. We will be individually strong. Our statements will be strong. Then we are strong. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.